Are we the only ones that are supposed to be here?
Yeah. Why?
Well, I just saw that weird-looking guy with the fuzzy hair.
You mean John Hammett?
That guy's a real freak.
Did you hear anything up on the roof?
I did not hit her. I did not. Oh, hi, Mark.
Yeah, I don't want to sleep here tonight knowing that Ned's still around.
Be careful around that building. Your father and I are concerned.
I love you, too. All right, why don't we split up and look for him?
What's wrong?
The phone's dead. Sounds like somebody's on the roof.
I'm so happy I have you as my best friend, and I love Lisa so much.
Greg, this isn't funny anymore!
I told you this guy, Hammett, is a real freak. The guy's sick.
Open the door. You've got to trust me. I came here to find you. To take you away from here.
Surprise! I didn't mean what I said. I'm sorry.
Looks like a multiple homicide. Somebody had a big night. But we got him.
I'm fed up with this world.
Hi, this is Adrienne King, Alice from Friday the 13th, and the hysteria continues.
And indeed it does. Welcome back to The Hysteria Continues, and this is our big 150. We have hit the 150 mark, so very excited. A landmark show for us and for you, dear listeners. And to help celebrate, we're joined by a very special guest, a friend of the show, Johnny Krug. Very glad to have you back, Johnny. How are you doing?
Awesome. I'm happy to be on the show. Thank you guys for inviting me on. It's been a while.
It's been a while. I know you were meant to be on a little while ago, and so scheduling conflicts and all that kind of things, but it's great to have you back. Always very welcome to be on, and I'm sure, well, we'd look forward to probing you later. So, but thank you, Johnny, for coming. Well, we won't get ahead of ourselves, but
well,
Eric,
thank you all.
Eric, how are you doing?
Well, Justin, I feel a bit sad, actually, to be honest.
Why is that?
Because, well, we're recording this a few days before Halloween, and, you know, I was in the costume shop and I had my eye on this really lovely tinsel wig, but I just can't afford it. It costs $5.
Well, actually, I know a party going on just up the road at the... Yes, it's like a little mansion just outside of Dublin.
Okay.
Run by this lovely leprechaun. So maybe you could take it up to him.
And would I get the tinsel wig in as payment?
You would, and much more.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm so there then. Okay. Oh,
Justin,
now I'm happy again.
You're not being near camp enough.
Who isn't, me or Eric?
You, because remember the costume shop owner was very camp.
Yeah.
So you have to turn on the campiness, Justin.
I simply can't. I simply can't.
You're not able to now.
No, it's I'm too macho for that kind of bullshit. But no, well, thank you, Eric. And Nathan, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. I got to leave work early so I could do this.
Do you think you could pull off that store owner better than I could?
No, I don't. I feel like I'm too droll. I don't know if I've got the campiness in me. That's why I was never able to be a drag queen and use that name I always wanted to use, Luna Chick.
I've been very good. Very good, yes. Well, Joseph, do you think you've got it in you?
Well, I have a kung fu grip because my name is Joe.
Okay. Well, that's true, yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Well, it's all going...
By the way, Eric. Mm.
Yeah.
By the way, Eric, I'm not going to hurt you. I love you.
I'd like
and
to...
and
to hurt me.
That was the most epic intro ever.
Mm.
Yeah, apparently really the Dornish Grey Blood has characters we didn't know.
Yeah, well, the reason it's in there, in case anyone was wondering, the quotes from the room is that they keep mentioning in Dornish Blood about things happening on the roof, and I was thinking, what film is there out there where lots of things happen on the roof? I know.
Oh, that was great! That intro was amazing. Yeah, I'm glad I muted my microphone because I was laughing.
Yeah, I was too.
There was a lot of things happening on the roof in the dorm that drip blood, wasn't there? A lot of things.
A lot, yeah.
Yeah, somebody had far too much time on their hands with a camera on the roof. But anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves. So, but yes, we are covering for the 150th episode of The Hysteria Continues, The Dorm That Drip Blood, a.k.a. Pranks, a.k.a. Death Dorm, and a.k.a. Third Night, I believe, was one of its earliest titles, which is probably all the background we've got. But
That's background sorted.
No, background sorted, yes. But before we do that, let's talk about what we've been watching recently. So, Johnny, have you seen anything of note you'd like to tell us about?
Recently, I just checked out the movie The Devil's Candy on Netflix, which I thought it was a pretty decent movie. It was probably not something I'd go back to, but it was a good one-time watch with Ethan Embry and the guy with the weird eyes from, what is it, Identity? The big fat guy with the eyes. He has, like, in real life, he has, detached retinas.
Pruitt Taylor Vince? Is that who you're talking about?
I think it's him, yeah. Yeah. His eyes are awesome, though, because I guess, you know, that's like a medical condition, but he's used it to his advantage in all his acting roles. So why not? Just strut it.
I've not seen it. I've seen that advertised on Facebook. But is it, what's it about, Johnny?
It's about a house where all this evil's happening, and this family moves in there. It's an artist and his teenage daughter and his wife. And while he's living in this house, something's consuming him, basically making him paint all this stuff that's really evil, and basically everything is coming true, what he's painting. But when he's doing this, he loses, like, large chunks of time, and he doesn't realize what he's done. And so through the whole movie, you're trying to figure out what's going on. And then there's this other guy who used to live in the house, the guy with the detached retinas, and he keeps coming around, and he has this fascination with the guy's teenage daughter. So the whole movie is like, you feel like the dad's possessed, but then you know this other guy's possessed too. So you're trying to kind of like figure out what's going on.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. I've not seen that yet. It's kind of weird. We were talking about this the other day, saying about slasher Guilty Party, which I know Joseph's seen, and he might talk a little bit more about shortly. But that's not made it to UK Netflix yet, so I'm not sure if this one has made it over here yet.
It was definitely a good one-time watch. Hmm. It's a very slow burn, and nothing really happens till the end. But, you know, if you're into that kind of thing, it's pretty good.
Cool. Okay. Well, no, that sounds. Anyone else seen that?
Not yet.
No, I've not even heard of it, actually. So.
Okay. Nathan?
It's interesting seeing Ethan Embry in a he's basically like, they for his role, they painted like full sleeves of tattoos on him, and he has this really bad long hair wig. So
who is Ethan Embry? I don't think I've.
He was the obnoxious. Records. He was also the obnoxious kid in that Dutch movie from the 90s. And he was on a TV show called Brotherhood. You'd know him if you saw him, but.
All right.
Yeah, he's a pretty funny actor. Like, usually when I see him in serious roles, it's kind of hard for me, because everything I've seen him in like the early 90s, he's always like the comic relief. And Devil's Candy, he's just, it's a straight performance. There's no levity or anything.
He was also one of the I don't know if you've seen Vacancy, Eric, but the snuff films at the hotel. He was one of one of the bad guys in that film.
Okay. Well, that was a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
Nathan, or Justin, I typed Candy into Netflix, and the closest match is Candyman Farewell to the Flesh. But you can also watch My Little Pony, A Very Minty Christmas comes up as well. But not Devil's Candy. It's not available on Netflix over here.
Talking of My Little Pony, I was at a work do the other day, and there was somebody who was there that said their brother was a brony. Do you know what a brony is?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, it's a brother who likes My Little Pony.
Yeah. We then got on to talking about plushies, so it's a very strange evening out. But I don't think there's a crossover between plushies and bronies, but there probably is. Eric would know, I'm sure.
When you see the brony conventions, there's a fine line between them and furries. It's very, very fine line.
Yeah. It's kind of a world you kind of have a little look into, but you don't necessarily want to get. You know, it's kind of like a horror movie, like the Belko experiment, isn't it? You get trapped in a room and everyone has to kill each other, dressed as My Little Pony. Yeah.
Well, I'd watch that movie.
Yeah, that would be a good movie, wouldn't it? So yeah, but. Johnny, is anything else you've seen you'd like to tell us about?
Oh, that's pretty much it. There's only one other thing, but I'm going to wait till we all talk about it.
Okay, fair enough. Well, thank you, Johnny. Eric, how about you?
Okay, I saw one called Suffer Little Children, which is a shot on VHS British movie from 1983. I'm not sure if you guys would have heard of it in the States. I don't think it had any international release, but it caused quite a furor back in the day because...
Was that the Toya Life concert, Suffer Little Children?
No, Justin Kurzweil. It was not the Toy Alive video. Toy Alive video was called Bringing Joy and Peace to the World Through the Gift of Music. World Tour. Yes, no. Suffer Little Children is actually a Smith song.
It is indeed. It is indeed.
Yeah. So, I'm sure you've heard of Suffer Little Children. I know you're pretending you haven't.
No, Justin. I have. It was it kind of lost, wasn't it? Or kind of not lost, but it was. It came out on VHS in the early 80s, isn't it?
Yeah, and then kind of disappeared, never got reissued. It's just been released by Intervision via Severin on DVD in the States. So I bought it because it's one I've been looking to see for quite a long time. It's set in a children's home, and one day a strange mute child arrives at the door. And after that, strange things start to happen, and all the children in this children's home, which seems to be like a townhouse in London, they all start getting possessed and start doing weird things and killing people and that, including someone who is forced to repeatedly stab themselves in the leg as they're sitting on their bed, and blood starts spurting all over their Thompson Twins poster, which was quite horrific for me. They also have a Bauhaus poster as well, you'd be glad to hear, Justin.
Well,
so they like Thompson.
Yeah.
They like Thompson Twins and Bauhaus, nice. Much like yourself.
Yeah, actually, I didn't mind Thompson Twins.
Okay, fair enough. I thought you were going to slate them there.
Well, no, I didn't mind before I kind of got into good music. They were kind of...
Yeah, I know, you did slate them. I knew you would do that. Yeah, and there's a subplot in Suffer Little Children where the home... where a former resident of the home comes back to as a special little visit because he's now a big international pop star. But then he walks into sort of this... den of satanic bloodshed. It has a very dark final 10 minutes with lots of blood and gore and that. But what I really enjoyed about it is that it's made by a children's drama group. And that's what caused the fuss back in the day, is that they thought it was wrong for children to be making a film about evil and Satan and bloodshed and all that type of thing. Its editing style is incredibly crude. I think it was edited, by the looks of it, by hooking up two VCRs together, because you get these sort of analog edits, punctuating certain scenes where you'll get a brief scene of VHS static before as it cuts to the next scene. So it was made by the Meg Shanks Drama School back in the day, and they worked on the script, they worked behind the scenes, obviously under sort of adult supervision to help them with the technical aspects. But it's basically kids have made this movie, and it's just surprising how sort of dark it turns towards the end, and there's no sort of happy ending to the film. I have to say I did warm to it quite well, and I think I might be turning into Nathan that way, because as I said, it's a shot on VHS movie made for, a couple of quid back in 1983. I normally wouldn't be the target audience for that, but for this one, I really enjoyed it.
Okay, cool. I've not seen it, but I know I know of it and its controversy. But,
yeah. Now it looked like image quality and that's crap. It's been released on DVD. They didn't bother going to Blu-ray for obvious reasons. There's no point. It looks horrendous. It's and the sound isn't great either, because it was all recorded on camcorders. So but thankfully Intervision have included subtitles, which help quite a lot. But well worth seeking out if you have a tolerance for that sort of shot and video 80 stuff, which I didn't really until I joined Hysteria Continues, and now I'm warming more and more to them. It's definitely not as bonkers or as fun as Boarding House, but it was far more enjoyable than I was anticipating.
Cool. I've not seen it, but I take it none of you other guys have seen it, or would I be wrong?
No, never heard of it.
No. Never seen it.
No, it's quite an obscurity. I think Nathan would probably like it quite a lot.
I think you would, Nathan, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I'll have to look for it then, because I do like shot on video.
Yeah, well, that's a recommendation. But talking, anything else, Eric?
No, that's it for me for this week.
Yeah. Okay, well, Nathan, how about you?
I watched Slasher Guilty Party, that second season. I've never finished the first season of Slasher. So, I mean, I will go back and watch it at some point. I just got kind of bored with it, just like I did with the Scream show. But I really liked this one. I mean, it gets a little convoluted as it goes along. I mean, how many of these people have past that involve murder that's at this camp? But, I mean, it's a lot of fun. It's enjoyable. And... as usual, I'm just like Eric. I'm absolutely terrible at guessing who the killer was, and I completely got it wrong. So there you have it. But it's got some crazy death scenes. There's like a crazy chainsaw scene and one with this giant drill. Is it an auger? Is that what they call that thing?
Yeah, it's an auger. Yeah.
And that death was pretty brutal. So it's got some crazy death scenes in it. And I love that aspect of it. I loved all the characters. There's one poor character that he can't catch a break. I mean, this guy, like, he gets put through the ringer on this show. Like, just about anything awful that could happen to him happens to him. So, poor guy. But ultimately, it was a good one, and I would recommend it.
Cool. Joseph, had you finished it last time we spoke? I can't remember.
Yeah, I finished it. I did guess the killer about 3 or 4 episodes in. So when the killer was revealed, I was a little upset, but the show overall is a lot of fun. The characters, they're really despicable, but they're really well written. They're not really obnoxious. They're just kind of, they're just evil people. And I guess they get what's coming to them that way. But you know, like Nathan said, there's a lot of great, great death scenes. It's never really boring. I mean, it kind of zips back and forth in time. So there's always something going on. A definite improvement over the first season. I won't say any more about it because I don't want to spoil it or anything. But yeah, I would definitely recommend it for at least a one-time watch.
Cool. Johnny, have you seen it?
No, I actually haven't seen that or the first season.
Well, I quite like the first. I'm probably in the minority. I quite like the first season, and I love the reveal of the killer, and also it had the kind of the most ridiculous kind of reveals of kind of sort of artwork, or not artwork, but sort of if you've ever seen Eyeball, when it actually shows the photo at the end revealing who the killer is, it has a similar kind of thing going on at the end of Slasher TV series, which I really liked. But as I mentioned before, it's for some bizarre reason, it's not on UK Netflix at the moment, even though it's a Netflix series. So don't know what's going on with that, but it still hasn't turned up here yet. So I don't know when it's coming out. But when it does, I will watch it. I imagine Eric as well, because it probably hasn't come up to Netflix Ireland yet, has it?
It hasn't come up to Netflix Ireland yet, no.
No.
So, but I haven't seen the first...
That just means Eric doesn't have it on his hard drive yet.
I don't know what you mean.
Yes. No. But
it might have something to do with the fact that I'm not interested in seeing this.
It's kind of weird to me that that they wouldn't have that same show on the UK Netflix just because they own the rights. Like, there's no rights dispute or anything.
No, it's kind of... I don't know what it is, because normally some things sort of come out. Like, the film I'm going to talk about came out on Netflix the same time, and you would think to stop people bootlegging it and watching it on torrents. You know, they would put it out at the same time. But there
that
you
makes
go.
Sense.
It does make sense. So, sorry, I've forgotten who we were talking to now. Was it... it was you, Eric, wasn't it?
No,
it was me.
Oh, sorry.
Lord.
Fuck you, go mind your business.
Actually, that's the only thing I've seen. The other thing I've seen is one where... Oh, my God. The other one is the one we're all going to talk about, except for you, Justin.
Yes, okay. Well, we'll come on to me a little bit later, but...
no, we won't. You're not that sick.
All of us will.
It's like it's Bukkake all the time.
Continues.
No, we'll do what Justin told us about seagulling.
Oh.
Oh, yes. Well, you have to listen to the Nail Gun Massacre commentary
for that little nugget.
Yes. So, thank you. Thank you, whatever your name is.
Mind your business.
Have you finished yet? Have you checked if he's finished?
Yeah, have you finished Nathan? No, I know I'm only joking.
I'll let you keep saying till you said my name, mister. But yes, I'm finished.
Good.
For now.
Well, thank you. Joseph, how about you? What have you been watching?
Well, I also watched the second season of Freakish on Hulu. I talked about the first season about a year ago. I really enjoyed this one, the first season. It's basically kind of a kamikaze, I don't want to call them zombies. They're just more like 28 days later infected, I guess, people or mutants. I don't know what you want to call them, but they call them freaks in this show. But basically, first season was about these kids trapped inside a school. And it's just kind of like one death after another. And this one, it's half of it still takes place in the school, and they kind of venture out of the school a little bit. But this one's more of the new characters show up, and some may be good, some may be bad. So as that sort of the thing, like paranoia going on, I enjoyed it a lot, probably as much as the first season. It's not a lot of people seem to be talking about it, but it's on Hulu. It's called Freakish. I definitely recommend the show because it's like 10 episodes and they're like 20 minutes each. So you can kind of just blaze through them in like, you know, a few hours. Definite, you know, fun one-time watch for both seasons. So there you go.
Excellent. I've not seen that. Anyone else?
No.
No.
No. Okay. Well, there's one to look out for. But I think there's something else you've been watching, Joseph, as well, isn't there?
Yeah, I saw a movie called, it's not really a horror film at all, but it's called Brawl in Cell Block 99. It's directed by, written and directed by the guy who did Bone Tomahawk with Kurt Russell. And this is the best movie I've seen all year, and probably in the last 5 years. It's got that exploitative title, so it sounds sort of like a 70s grindhouse movie. In a way, it kind of is, because it's like, you know, splatter movie violence and just relentlessly gory and, you know, violent and kind of no holds barred thrills and spills and all that stuff. But it's just really, really well done, really suspenseful. And I've never been a big fan of Vince Vaughn as an actor or as a person, honestly. But he was so good in this movie. It's like, wow, what a revelation. It's basically about a guy. He's like a low rent criminal, and he gets sent to a minimum security prison for drug running. And for reasons I won't spoil, he has to kind of manipulate his way into a maximum security prison to do something. You know, otherwise, someone he's close to will, you know, suffer if he doesn't. But that's basically the premise of the movie. So, you know, he has to kind of figure out a way to get from one prison to another to complete this task. And it's just very, very suspenseful. And just the way he gets in and out of these situations and how he finds his way out of these like little predicaments, you know, being confined into a dank kind of a urine soaked hellhole or a pee pee soaked heck hole. Sorry. It's just a really, really great, great movie. I mean, if you like those kind of grindhousey, you know, action type thrillers where people's bones get snapped and the good guy is like a cool headed guy, but at the same time, he's very, very lethal and deadly and just all that sort of stuff. I mean, I think you might like it. It's just really well acted, really well shot. It's almost 2.5 hours long, but this is like the first movie in a long time that I didn't care. It could have went on to 3 hours and I wouldn't have minded. It's kind of like Fatal Frames in that way, although it's not funny like Fatal Frames. But no, it's like it gets my highest recommendation. It is the best movie I've seen this year, and I'd be curious to see if anything, you know, will best it. I don't think it will, considering we're at the end of the year, but I really, really love this movie, and I definitely recommend that you all check it out.
Cool. Sounds good. Anyone else seen it?
No.
Not yet, but I do plan to.
Not yet. I'm actually going to see it pretty soon.
Cool. Excellent. Well, thank you,
Joseph. Although, Joseph, I do think the Disaster Artist might give it a run for its money.
Yeah, now that's one it might, you know, might dethrone it. But right now I'm sticking with Brawl and Cell Block 99 until I Did Not Hit Her comes out.
That's awesome. That's a great recommendation. Like, best movie in the last 5 years is pretty awesome.
Excellent, yeah. Excellent. Well, thank you, Joseph. Is there anything else we want to talk about?
Yeah, I saw another one that I think all of us except you have seen, and that's Better Watch Out, which is a Christmas home invasion thriller. I can't really say more than that, but it's one of the better home invasion movies I've seen in a long time. Just don't read anything about it and don't watch the trailer because it spoils a lot of the surprises. But this was very, very clever and very, very funny and, you know, pretty suspenseful and well acted, very, very well shot. I think the some of the twists and turns it takes is kind of what, you know, makes it a, you know, it brings it above the standard, you know, home invasion thriller. But no, I mean, and it's got, you know, I don't know if Eric will agree because I think we spoke about this earlier in the week, Nathan, Eric, and I, that what happens at the end may not mean as much in Ireland as it does here. But it's, without saying anything else, it's one of the most satisfying kind of one of the most satisfying endings to one of these types of films I've seen in a long time. So, yeah, this is another, you know, one of the better movies I've seen this year. Definite thumbs way up for me.
It really is probably one of my favorite movie endings of all time. Like, I absolutely love the way it ended. And a lot of times the ending can let a movie down, but not this one. And I really enjoyed the movie. I thought it was really good. It's hard to say much about it without spoiling stuff. But, I mean, it's a very big recommendation from me, too.
I thought it was extremely well made. The movie, like you're saying, the way it was shot, there were scenes where someone would fall over and the camera would follow them as they're falling to the ground. And I thought that was such a cool thing. I've never really seen that in a movie. And whoever the cinematographer does, they did that in this movie, I think, three times. And I thought that was a pretty brave choice to, like, have the camera follow every motion of that actor. And it's a fun movie, like start to finish. Like, I had a really good time. I probably sat there with a Joker-like smile on my face while I watched it. But it was a really good. I would put it up there in my top Christmas horror movies.
Cool. Eric, you've seen it as well, I believe.
Yeah, I probably had a different reaction to it. I mean, I thought it was quite good, but I didn't think there was anything exceptional about it. First of all, I love the opening. It has a really old-fashioned font they use for the opening credits, which makes it feel like a really old-fashioned 1940s Christmas movie. And I like that touch. And I was with it for the first half hour. Then a twist happens halfway, half an hour into the film, that it stopped being fun and it became kind of mean-spirited and a bit sleazy for my liking. The ending, no, I do get the ending. It's not something that that you won't get if you're outside the US, believe me. But what I was hoping for was a sort of a more prolonged ending. I can't go into details, obviously, but I was hoping that that final shot would have, you know, been stretched out to sort of 10 minutes and we could see more. I would have liked an after the credits, basically, to have happened. To see what happened next. I don't think I'm as enthusiastic about it as Johnny, Joseph and Nathan. But I actually, another film I saw, it's on Netflix over here as well, is The Babysitter, which is one you mentioned a few weeks ago. Joseph, I think, was it, or was it Nathan? And it has a similar setup, but I prefer I thought The Babysitter was much better because it was more fun.
I saw that one. I saw.
No, I haven't.
Who was it? Nathan talking about The Babysitter, or was that Joseph? I can't remember.
No, it's Nathan. Think we both talked about it, didn't we?
Well, no, Nathan did. I was going to watch it, and I just haven't gotten around to it yet.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I love The Babysitter. I thought it was just such a fun movie, and I mean, to me, I did kind of like Better Watch Out a little bit more. But I mean, I would actually probably find The Babysitter would be a movie that I would probably rewatch more. I would think The Babysitter has, I guess, more of a rewatchable factor for me.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah.
Well, funny enough, but that was the film I was going to talk about, was The Babysitter, because I remember Nathan said you'd seen it, so I watched it on Netflix. It's one of the films that did come out at the same time as the States, so finally got around to watching that, and I thought it was very silly, wasn't it? It's kind of it's not going to. I've seen people criticising it, saying it's like a teenager's idea of what a grindhouse movie would be like. But it kind of the director, I think he do Supernatural, and he's done quite a few. I mean, he's even older than me, so he's not like
MacG,
which is, I mean, you've got to hate him for that name, haven't you, really? But
the name's horrible.
Yeah.
But the fact is that it's kind of like he's not a kid making a movie. He's kind of somebody, you know, he's made quite a few exploitation horror sort of style movies and TV shows and things, and I thought it was fun. It was a fun movie. It was kind of like a kind of an R-rated Home Alone, really, wasn't it? I thought it was kind of in so much it was very, very gory, you know, ultra violent, in so much like, you know, very kind of heavy FX kind of and it kind of goes where we don't want to talk too much about it because it kind of spoil the fun, but I thought it was very entertaining,
and I thought the ending of The Babysitter was was for me a satisfying end to the film. I thought it was silly and over the top, and it was, it had a very 80s feel. It felt to me like similar to a Joe Dante movie, something like Gremlins was the kind of vibe I was getting from Babysitter, which I was hoping I would get from Better Watch Out, but didn't.
Well, that was the thing, wasn't it? What's kind of strange is that it's got like kids who are probably the same age as the ones in Stranger Things, isn't it? That kind of like sort of pre-adolescent kind of kids, a couple of a male and a female in the film, and a few of their kind of peripheral friends. But it's not the kind of film that, well, certainly most parents would let their kids watch. But it's kind of almost like a kid's idea of a horror movie in some ways. It's kind of quite cartoonish, but yeah, I thought it was pretty entertaining. Johnny, have you seen The Babysitter yet?
No, I haven't had a chance to yet. I actually want to, though.
I think you'd enjoy it. It's kind of, yeah, it's I think Nathan, you said it was kind of a slasher movie where it's the baddies being bumped off in slasher movies.
Yeah.
But, that's awesome.
Yeah, so that's all good. So anything else we want to talk about before we get onto the main attraction? I shall take that as a no.
Is The Babysitter the only thing you saw?
Pretty much. I haven't had a chance to watch anything else. The only thing I've been catching up on, I've seen some very sort of arty films. I saw...
here we go.
Oh, I know. I saw amazing Jean Genet movie, Eric. No. I saw Nocturnal Animals tonight, which was the Tom Ford movie with Amy Adams and Jake Gyllenhaal, which was kind of has a bit of kind of a thriller horror thing going through it, but it was not as good as A Single Man, which is Tom Ford's other movie that I really liked. But the only thing I've been watching is Mindhunter on Netflix, about the kind of birth of criminal profiling of serial killers.
What do you think? Because I watched the first 5 episodes and I really, really liked it a lot. I haven't been able to finish it yet, though. But I thought the first 5, it's really talky, but it's really some of the serial killer, or I guess in this case, the sequence killer, I guess the interviews, I thought they were really well done.
Yeah, I thought it's really good. I'm enjoying it. It is quite talky, but it's kind of I think I'm using the Eric Threlfall kind of method of judging it, in so much that I don't reach for my iPad or my phone while I'm watching it. So it's keeping me gripped. And so I watch it all the way through, and I think it's really well acted. I mean, the period detail in it is amazing. The 70s look really dowdy. Everything, they're not going for that kind of disco ball or anything like that. Everything looks dowdy and beige. Just how the 70s probably did look in that kind of outside of the kind of the hip, you know, Studio 54 and sort of in New York and sort of Los Angeles and the Grindhouse, 42nd Street. Everywhere else, it probably just everything did look beige, and people did still look like they were dressed up, especially FBI in the 1960s. So, I think it's great so far. I'm really enjoying it. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes, especially as I can't watch Slasher Guilty Party. So, this is the next best thing.
You saw that too, didn't you, Johnny?
Mindhunter?
Yeah.
Yes, I forgot all about that until he was mentioning it. That show, I loved it. That first season was great. I love how well they played, the guy who played Edmund Kemper did. Like, I think he did an amazing job on the show. I mean, he talks a little bit slower than Edmund Kemper, but he looks and has the same mannerisms as him. If you watch Edmund Kemper interviews in prison, it's pretty much identical. So hopefully that actor will get some kind of nomination for that.
I thought he was really good, wasn't he? Because he's kind of the whole banality of evil, wasn't it? The idea that these people are kind of just quite boring in real life and quite normal. So I think it was. Have you watched the whole series, Johnny?
Yes, I watched the whole first season.
Does it lend itself to a second season?
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah, definitely. Because if you notice throughout every episode, they have either at the beginning or the end of the episode, they have like a little overarching kind of storyline going on. It's like 5 minutes per episode the BTK killer, Dennis Rader.
Okay. Yeah.
And in Kansas, and basically how the FBI struggled to find him for like 30 years. And I think they said next season it's going to be all about him.
Okay. Okay. Excellent. All right. Well, thank you. That's our kind of recently seen. So let's get on to the main attraction. So I'll play the trailer and we'll come back with that in just a second.
It's time for a crash course in terror at the dorm that dripped blood.
Oh, great.
What's wrong?
The phone's dead.
Did you hear anything up on the roof?
Do you think we need to go up there?
Need to? We don't need to do anything.
Ripped blood, where the only thing you'll learn is how to die. The dorm that dripped blood, rated R.
On the eve of Christmas vacation, a college dormitory stands condemned. The dark hall's now vacant and unsafe. Student Joanne Murray and her close friends volunteer to help close down the building, unaware a psychopathic lunatic is hiding in the shadows. As the students disappear one by one, Joanna discovers the horrifying reality that if she's to survive, she alone will have to find a way to slay the brutal murderer. The Dorm That Dripped Blood was released in the UK in the early 80s as Pranks, and it's one of the film's many titles. And I've seen quite a few people say that there wasn't that many pranks in the film, although this time when I watched it, I did watch it to see how many pranks there were, and there were quite a few, well, it was about four or five, all by the same character throughout the film. But The Dorm That Dripped Blood is probably a better title. It's not my favourite early 80s slasher movie. I think it's fine. I enjoy it for what it is. It's not a top tier slasher. But for a film that was shot for $90,000 on weekends, I think it's quite an accomplished little movie. It probably distinguishes itself from the pack. It's very much cookie cutter in a lot of ways, in so much that it was clearly modelled on the success of Friday the 13th. The idea of getting young people into an isolated location and killing them off in gory manner. The special effects are pretty good. They're no Tom Savini in Friday the 13th, but they're pretty gory enough to land the film into trouble with the British censors. It's kind of, I enjoy it for what it is. I've got the, as probably many of you, well, I expect most of you have got the Synapse films. They released the 105-minute cut of the film. In fact, if anything, I think the film could be cut down a little bit more.
105?
Well, I think that's what
I saw.
Are
you sure about that?
Well, that's what I saw someone saying it's 105 minutes on the...
Hang on, I've got playing... It's 88 minutes.
Well, it says 88, but somebody said, I did read somewhere, it said 105 minutes. Maybe there's an even longer cut out there somewhere, which I hope not, because this this film, as we were talking off air, it seems there's an awful lot of shots of somebody walking around with a camera filming tarmac on roofs, which is a very bizarre choice. But the film itself distinguishes itself, I kind of guess, probably with its ending, which we'll talk about, which goes into a darker place, a much darker place than most slash movies of the time, and it's a kind of make or break moment in the film, and I love it or hate it. I love it in so much that it kind of does something different, because the rest of the film is pretty much cookie cutter. And you know, don't get me wrong on that, because obviously I love slasher movies. I love cookie cutter. In fact, sometimes the more cookie cutter early 80s slasher is, the better. But
you're making me hungry.
Snickers, Kit Kat, but it's kind of, but for it to go off in this kind of tangent, to go off in a much darker way, into kind of ending that you don't, you did see, I kind of guess, in some early 80s horror movies, but it's very nihilistic ending, which you certainly didn't really see in sort of like the more kind of popcorn-y horror movies at the time. So I thought that was an interesting choice, especially as it was clearly a calling card for its directors, who went on to do quite a lot in the industry and still working, I believe. So to do something like that, it was kind of an interesting choice. But yeah, but I'd be interested to hear. I've got more to say about it, obviously, but I'd be interested to hear what our very special guest Johnny has said about it. Is this the first time you've seen it? Probably not, I'm sure. So it's,
no, I really like this movie. I mean, this movie to me is it's one of the very few like extremely mean-spirited slasher movies that I really like, because most of the time when you get these movies like, I consider movies like Intruder to be kind of mean-spirited, but they still have, you know, the fun characters and the levity and stuff in there, whereas this movie never really has any moments like that, and it's just kind of grim the entire 88 minutes, and like you said, the ending just solidifies the entire feeling for the whole movie, and I really like that. The score by Chris Young, it's weird to me because he's done stuff so different on every project I've heard, but this one was... It sounded very similar to Friday the 13th, the original score by Manfred Eagany. And that was one thing that I found kind of odd. Maybe it's because it was early in his career, but if you listen to his later scores, they've all been really different and just out there and unique. And this one didn't feel really unique to me. It just felt like he was just, like you say, cookie cutter. It felt like he just went and he listened to the score to Friday the 13th and was like, I can mimic that. And just went after it pretty much. But another thing I like about the movie, too, is I know these are all supposed to be college kids. I assume college kids, but there's a much older feeling to these people in the movie, and I like that because, again, with a lot of slashers, you're dealing with young people, and these characters don't seem as young as they're playing.
That's something you pointed out in your Hysteria Lives review, I think, Justin, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think it's they don't. I mean, I think the person who turned out to play the killer was about. I looked. I actually found, spoiler alert, I found him on Facebook. I didn't get in contact at this point, but he was only 23 when they did this, and obviously Daphne Zuniga was kind of even younger. But the rest of them seemed to be kind of knocking 30, didn't they?
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
especially the main actress, and I'm actually shocked. She was pretty good, and she didn't go on to do anything.
I thought she was good. I saw people talking about her, saying that she was kind of like really preachy and things, but I thought she was actually quite a likable character.
I'd agree. Too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, one thing just mentioned before, just about the score, was the other thing that it kind of kept on leapt out was obviously Friday the 13th, but obviously Psycho as well, Bernard Herrmann, that kind of stabbing strings thing was the biggest ripoff, I thought. It clearly unembarrassed to use that throughout the film. I wonder if it was a kind of almost like humorous, done in a humorous way, really, because it was so kind of blatantly ripped off. And not, I mean, so many films are ripped off the Psycho score, but that was so kind of over the top ripoff. But thank you, Johnny. I mean, obviously, we'll come to talk more about it. But Joseph, I just wondered, what were your thoughts on The Dormant Drip Blood? Again, I'm sure it's a film you've seen many times.
Yeah, I like it a lot. It's very, very dingy and grimy. Shot on 16 millimeter and blown up for 32. It employs a lot of really neat handheld shots. I mean, they kind of overdo it a little bit, but I kind of like that right in the moment feel that the film has with the handheld stuff. I think all the characters, including the main girl, I think they're all, you know, fairly likable. I read that too, where everyone says she was preachy and holier than thou, and I didn't really see that. I thought she was, you know, very likable. So that makes the nihilistic ending, you know, all that more of a gut punch. But I think the standout here is the killer who plays, the guy who plays the killer, and I guess we can spoil it since we always do. It turns out to be Craig, one of the students. Is Stephen Sachs or Satch? I don't know how you pronounce his last name.
Sachs is how they pronounce it on the track, yeah.
Yeah, but I thought he was really, really convincing as a kind of off his rocker kind of psycho when he's revealed to be the killer, because through the whole film he's like, you know, he's kind of this practical joker, but if you pay attention close enough, you see little kind of cracks in the facade, like where he's got kind of this look on his face, or he kind of goes a little overboard with the John Hammett character, you know, telling him to stay away, and you can see he's a little unhinged, but you don't really pick up on it too much. But when he's revealed to be the killer, you're like, ah, okay. But no, I thought he was really, really, really effective as the murderer at the end there. I don't know. I mean, I could say a lot more, but it's just it's low budget. It's very it has that grindhouse kind of you know, gather up a few film students and let's see what we can, you know, put together kind of feel to it. But it really works in its favor. A thumbs up from me. I like it a lot. I don't think it's one of the top tier slasher films from the golden era, but definitely top 100 material, I'd say, at least.
Okay, well, thank you. Eric, would you say this is top 10 for you or top 100?
I think it's very, very good. I would say probably top 50. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, again, this is a film I saw back on VHS back in the day, and it suffered from that humongous and mutilator syndrome in that the VHS copies of it back then were practically unwatchable. I mean, the film was kind of a chore to sit through because so many scenes were just so incredibly dark that you just couldn't see what was going on. I could see, though, that the film had potential, and I waited patiently for the day when it was restored, and thankfully Synapse did that in 2011. The film doesn't look, you know, $1 million by any means, and it's certainly, you know, you wouldn't use it as a test disc for your new Blu-ray system, but at least you can see things clearly now. And also, of course, the gory effects have been reinstated, and the audio has been cleared up as well, which was another problem I had with the VHS copy I had back in the day. And what I love about the film is that it feels very much like peak era slasher movie. You know, anything in 1981 is going to have it has a head start already, in my opinion, you know, when it comes to entertaining me, if it's made in that era. And it hits all the cliche buttons, as you said, but again, that's not a problem. That's what I love the genre for. And, you know, the plot itself is typically threadbare. And, you know, as Joseph was saying there, the killer's identity, I'm pretty sure when I watched this first, I didn't guess who the killer was, probably because I couldn't see half of the movie. But in retrospect, looking back at it, I thought his identity became pretty obvious quite early in the movie. It's easy for me to say that with hindsight when I know who the killer is. But did you get that, Joseph, when you were rewatching it, that, well, he's obviously the killer, because it's the character who... It's the one character who seems a little edgier than the others, and he stands out a mile, and he sort of disappears and reappears, and no?
Yeah, I don't remember if I guessed it right. I probably did, but it's been so long since I first saw it. Mm. I think this is like late 80s or early 90s when I first saw it. But, I mean, watching it now, it is pretty obvious who the murderer is. It's you know it's never going to be John Hammett, which is going to be Red Herring. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure, I mean, it probably was an effective mystery back in this time. Sorry, Justin, was it you were saying?
Well, no, I was going to say, do you notice the killer kind of managed to take off his black sweatshirt in between kills? Because whenever he's killing anyone, he's got a black sweatshirt on, and then you see him a couple of minutes later and he hasn't. So, which I thought was, it's very efficient.
Diana Prince can make her purse disappear when she spins around and turns into Wonder Woman.
That's true. But,
you know, we can get safely into slasher or into spoiler territory, as you were saying. It's obviously, the frizzy-haired John Hammett, although he's fingered throughout the movie, Justin.
Oh, Eric.
He turns out not to be the killer, although laughably... He never gets around to stating the fact that he's not a killer to anyone. And even though it's made clear later on that he knows who the killer is, he still doesn't manage to tell anyone who the killer is. He just manages to walk around acting weird, spouting oddly delivered dialogue, and shuffling around like a zombie.
He's like, wait, come here, wait. He never says, hey, it's him.
I know. It's like, oh, my God, how stupid do you have to be? And he's in college. Come on. But, you know, I don't care. It's got power cuts. It's got people wandering alone into basements. It's got characters saying things like, quit it, you're really scaring me, or whatever she says. And it's got great low-budget gore. I mean, yeah, it looks a bit fake in retrospect, but I think it delivers the goods. And it's got that great cat-and-mouse chase at the end, followed by the atypical finale that we were talking about. That's atypical, not typical. And it also has the orchestral score by Christopher Young, which raises its credibility slightly, I think. And the actors are all fairly decent, as we've been discussing. I think the guy playing Hammett is probably a bit over the top. But I thought that I agree with Joseph completely. I think the guy playing, is it Stephen Sachs we said his name was, the guy playing the killer? I think he's brilliant at the end. He goes completely Mrs. Voorhees at the end, and I thought he was very effective. So, yeah, it's a bit rough around the edges, but I would still... classify it as an essential watch for fans of classic era slasher movies, even though, you know, it probably wouldn't make my top 20. But, you know, I still see it as an essential watch. And I'm surprised it's taken us till episode 150 to cover this one.
Yeah, well, we've got to hold back some big ones, haven't we?
Yep.
So, Nathan, how about you?
Oh, I really like The Dorm That Dripped Blood. I don't necessarily like the ending, but, I mean, that's just because it's very important to me that the bad guys don't win. So when the bad guys win, it just kind of sucks. Because I'm like, you know, the bad guys win enough in real life. I want to watch a horror movie. I want to watch somebody, like, defeat the bad guy.
Well, I'll be interested to hear your after the credits then.
Oh, I've got a great one for this one. Okay. But to me, the reason it doesn't ruin the whole movie for me is a couple of things. Number one, I think it is kind of amusingly ironic that the cops are complaining about the smell, which I think was actually kind of an interesting, like, capper to the film. So, you know, it's got that. And also, I actually find lots of parts of this film to be, like, genuinely unnerving. Like the shots of the killer's point of view, like walking like around the roof and stuff. I don't know, like the music combined with those scenes is really scary. And go away, motorcycle guy.
Oh my god. Rhubarb woman giving out to motorcycle guy.
It's like motorcycles revving up forever out here. Like, go away, I'm trying to talk.
Wow.
Gosh.
That's interrupting me during my very, very, like, important conversation.
That's a new sound. I've never heard one.
But I actually find some parts of it to be, you know, kind of genuinely creepy. I even find that beginning scene when Joanne and her boyfriend walk past that one building and, like, the silhouette is in there. I think that scene, that silhouette's very creepy to me. It looks weird. It almost looks like a Medusa or something. So, yes, very, very creepy. I think that the dorm itself is a really good setting. The dorm is a character in and of itself. Like, I think it looks very foreboding, and I love that. Like you guys said, this movie is pretty mean-spirited, and that's something that Amanda and I bonded over because, I mean, you know, we've mentioned before that the Daphne Zuniga's grandma is in the hospital and her family comes to pick her up because they're going to go visit her. And then, of course, Craig murders the entire family. So I can't imagine the doctor going in the room and being like, I know you've had a bad day, but your family's dead too. Which really, if you think about it, it doesn't make sense that he killed them with his motive, you know, because they were leaving. Like, they wouldn't have been there or to have been in his way. But
what,
I guess
what is his exact motive?
Yeah, what is his motive?
He fancies Joanne.
Yeah.
But why?
He's very much attracted to her and wants her.
But surely there'd be better ways to, when she was saying to that other guy, I'm splitting up with her boyfriend, Tim, or whatever it was, and saying we get on each other's nerves. So if Craig hadn't been a psychopathic murderer, he might have had a chance.
Yeah, just fire up some milk tray.
The problem for Craig, though, is that he was crazy.
Well, yes, there is that, but yeah.
I mean, he was completely insane. So, yeah, which makes me wonder about Craig's past. There's an origin story we need. I get tired of these, like, Jason or Michael Myers or Leatherface origin stories. Why don't we get an origin story about Craig's life growing up?
I can't imagine.
The public demands it.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
Michael Bay.
I can't imagine Blumhouse. Blumhouse is going to go for that as their next blockbuster.
They could even do like a prequel where he's killed a group of other people because he was in love with somebody. You know, he could be like, you know, the kind of the reverse Black Widow.
Well, that's why
he's the guy. Mm. He's the guy who created Craigslist.
He'd be the real Craigslist killer.
Well, that's what I said.
But I agree with you guys. I think that he did a great job when he was revealed to be the killer. I think it was a great job. And can I just say, I absolutely love the name John Hammett. I like that name a lot. I don't know why. I just think the Hammett goes really well with that name. John Hammett.
I like his hair.
I can see that.
Did you notice the hairstyles changing throughout the movie?
He's got the Larry Fine going on over there.
I also have to love Joanne's, you know, in one scene when she, the killer's revealed, I love what she decides to do when she finds out it's Craig. She just kind of smacks him in the face, which I thought was a very interesting thing to do right at that moment. Although, to me, I do feel like Joanne wasn't particularly smart at the end because Craig was in love with her. I mean, all she had to do was pretend. And I know she tried at one point, but I would have pretended and been like, oh, yeah, let's go on a killing spree together. And, yeah, you know, well, like so we would dreamy. Leave the dorm and all that. And then as soon as he turned his back on me, bam, scissors to the neck.
Yeah.
And then we're done.
Now you're scaring us, Nathan.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, if I was in her position, I would play along. It's a smart thing to
call
the
cops on Nathan.
If
calling 911.
Yeah, if a motorcycle cyclist turns up dead in Tennessee anytime soon, then we know.
scissors in his neck.
Yeah. That was quite a rant. It was like, I mean, it just kept going and going and going, and it was very annoying.
Well, talking of victims, do we have any theories about who the person who's killed at the beginning of the film is?
It was a guy that I think looked at Joanne the wrong way at a party.
Yeah.
And Craig didn't like that.
Okay.
I'm just guessing. That's just my theory.
Do we think, because without getting into background, but just one little bit of background just ties into this, was that from the extras that the maker, Matthew Mungall, who did the special effects on this, sort of said that the directors Jeffrey Obro and Stephen Carpenter did a kind of a trailer to raise the money to make the rest of the movie. So I wondered if that was from the trailer, because it had nothing to do with the rest of it.
Yeah.
I mean, that would make sense. I just wonder why the guy's hand was made of Jell-O.
It cut very easily, didn't it? Like a knife through butter. Yeah. So
he didn't have any bones in that hand.
No. So, I mean, it was kind of. I was trying to think. One thing I was going to actually ask Johnny about, because obviously I know your famous catchphrase. But what did you think of Alice, Johnny?
they weren't bad. I mean, in a movie like this, you kind of, I don't know, given the characters. There were only three women in the entire movie, so I didn't really expect to see titties. But when it happens, first of all, the whole scene was very weird because obviously he was cheating on her or trying to cheat on her. Mm. And she heard the whole conversation and then decides to strip down. But I don't know. It was weird. It was like a peek into the trailer park, like the meth trailer park.
It was.
I like the exciting plot device of Joanne selling a table. And that's how they meet initially.
It was quite.
Do you think he was set up to be a red herring too? I kind of felt that way.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, it's quite sleazy, wasn't it? Because also, wasn't it the was it the same night when Alice kind of dropped her 90 that he went driving off to sea? Was that was a different night, wasn't it, from the night where he turned up at the end? Or was that the same night? I can't remember now. Did watch it today.
Yeah, I think that was a separate night.
It was a separate night. So you went driving off to see her, but then you didn't hear anything about him, did you? So it was, it was strange. But I like the fact that it's that whole weird downbeat kind of ending that he goes and even though he's gone, he's like, he's got sleazy intentions, he's cheating on his girlfriend, going to for this the sexy Joanne sort of have a
hot sarcasm is the lowest form of wit.
I know, but the hot date with Joanne, who wants nothing to do with him anyway, so he goes around sniffing around the dilapidated, deserted dorm, and then ends up becoming her savior, doesn't he? Or would be savior, would be hero, but then he ends up literally being shot dead by the police, thinking he's a killer. Although,
when he shouldn't have fell for Craig's trick. He shouldn't have done that. Well, because I mean, Craig might have stabbed him, but then he would have given himself away.
Well, that's true. But he was in a rock and a hard place, really, wasn't he? But it's an interesting point, isn't it? But we should, shall we talk about the ending? Let's talk about the ending, because the ending is we don't actually know exactly what happens, but we're led to believe that Craig puts Joanne in the incinerator. But does he put himself in the incinerator as well? That's the, that's kind of an after the credits thing, really, isn't it? But we're kind of led to believe that Joanne is dumped in the incinerator, but we don't know whether or not she's alone.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they died together or if he just dumped her in there and basically got away with it all. You never find out.
No, because he could have put her in and come back and lay down. Couldn't he? No, doesn't he come back? Doesn't the policeman come back and say, well, he was here a minute ago, and then he says, let's go and check by the incinerator. So you've got this kind of thing, that the idea that she could still be saved, but Craig is kind of so mad. But, it's one of those things you never quite know. But we're led to believe that Joanne has been burnt alive. So, which is quite a downbeat ending, isn't it?
Mm. Well, she was unconscious for it.
Well, it's like, wasn't her friend boiled alive? Or
Yeah, her friend is boiled alive, isn't she?
Also, yeah, that's pretty bad too.
I never got the vibe that he was going to jump into the incinerator as well, to be honest. I just assumed he made a run for it. Well, he doesn't need to make a run for it, because they all think that it's Bobby Joe, whatever his name is the killer. So,
But you know, he didn't use gloves on anything, like his murder weapons or anything, so he might still get caught.
Those small town cops seem like they'd be kind of derelict in duty. Like, I don't think they would even search for that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
No. I feel like they'd call in the feds, though, for a big massacre.
Yeah. You know, you were talking earlier about, the downbeat ending and how the bad guy kind of gets away with it. Some movies I really like that. Like this one, I appreciate the ending. And another one is Edge of the Axe is another one where I really like the ending, because you're like, you don't want her to get away, but in the last second, you're like, damn it.
I like Edge of the Axe. I think a downbeat ending can sometimes work for me if the movie itself. Edge of the Axe is a very cheesy movie.
Cheesy.
To me, it's not very, like, serious film, so I could kind of deal with it then. But if you pick, like, I would say, not necessarily a slasher, but if we were talking about, and I'm not going to give any away, a lot of. Well, Eden, like, oh, God, yeah. Don't even get me started on that thing.
Yeah.
But, like, home invasion movies, a lot of home invasion movies, like, they end with the bad guys winning. Like, I've noticed with a lot of them, they end that way. Mm. And it's almost become cliche that if I see a home invasion movie, I just assume the bad guys are going to win. Mm. And to be honest with you, I just don't see the fun in certain movies where you watch a family get tortured for an hour and a half and then killed. And then the bad guys, like, win and leave the house or whatever. To me, I don't know. I just don't – I don't enjoy that. So I don't find it to be a fun experience to watch them.
Mm. That makes sense.
Yeah, fair enough.
I would agree, yeah.
Do you think – what do you think about having Mindhunter, Dawn of the Dread Blood – crossover? Do you think David Fincher would go for that?
So that would be awesome.
To try to find Craig.
Well, they get him into a room and start asking him questions about black sweatshirts and boiling people alive and what happened to Joanne.
Holt McCallany could have been like, so how do you change your sweater between kills?
Yeah. But is there anything else we want to say before we get onto some background?
The dorm did drip blood.
It did apparently. Drip blood. Well,
yeah.
Well, okay. Well, let's get on to some background. And who would like to go first? Nathan, I'm sure you've got a whole encyclopedia worth of background for us. Would you want to start us off?
Well, it was shot primarily on the UCLA campus.
Well, there you go.
So, you know, we got that
joke backfired on you, Justin. You were expecting Nathan to go, I don't have any.
I know.
You expected me to say no.
No, you proved me wrong. So that's revenge is a sweet pill, or a bitter pill.
It was, and if it makes you feel any better, Justin, I didn't get that you were making fun of me.
I wasn't making
until
fun
Eric
of you.
Said something.
Well, thank you, Eric.
But it happens to me in real life all the time. In real life, as if this podcast—it's not real life. You know, we're all made up, apparently.
See, Nathan, you're worrying us now. You're talking about stabbing a biker in the neck with scissors, and now you're saying this isn't real life.
I was annoyed at a biker and the scissor thing, which you probably will try to cut together with clever editing to make it sound like I'm a murderer. But no, I was just saying what I would do if I was Joanne.
And then you go on about people who are killed actually not being dead. You know, it's kind of, it's a little bit, it's, maybe I've been
what
watching
are you talking
too much.
About? I don't think worrying. Anybody that's
yeah, Alice,
been killed
Alice,
is still alive.
Alice in Friday the 13th.
No. We already explained that.
See, that's why I've been watching too much Mindhunter.
Yeah.
Okay.
I won't even kill a spider. I picked them up and put them outside.
Well, thank you,
Nathan.
Well,
are you a solipsist? Everyone's a figment of your imagination.
Yeah, that's me. Like, you're all figments of my imagination. If that was true, y'all'd be nicer to me.
Ooh. We're like a more vulgar version of the movie Inside Out.
Yeah.
Well, I think Joseph's got to be the one who's worried, because actually, Nathan, your flies haven't turned up yet, so I'm not too worried about your threats.
Oh, threats are very audible.
Hmm?
I forgot about the flies.
Yeah, they haven't turned up yet, so they must have got lost.
I like that the woman who played Alice's name is Chandra with no last name. It's very Madonna.
I love that. I really don't think she did that on purpose. I honestly think because of this movie and the fact that she's in it for 5 minutes and all she does is try to get some dick, I think that probably – she probably didn't want to give her last name in the credits.
I would love for it to have been like at the very beginning of the credits, like a – like after all the cast is put on the screen, like it says, and Chandra as Alice. I think that would have been in the credits, but they didn't do that, unfortunately.
I didn't want to jump in on this. I was just going to say the one name thing with, you know, Chandra, Toya.
There's no comparison. Toya wouldn't do something like that.
Trashy
80s. Toya was in just one name too.
She's Toya Wilcox.
Yeah.
Toya is in The Dorm That Dripped Blood.
No, she's not.
She played John Hammett.
John Hammett's hair looks more like...
Well, not really, because Toya was known to being a little bit ginger.
So anyway, continue with your background, Nathan.
Yeah, Nathan.
Thank you. Come on. It was shot on 16mm. Which was subsequently blown up to 35mm. And that happened very often in low-budget movies in the 80s. And I'm pretty sure it was a video nasty, because I know I read that to avoid an X rating, they had to make a lot of cuts to the movie. And I saw, like, some of the uncut death scenes, and they were actually, you know, really good. I liked it, especially the drill scene. That was a good scene. It kind of reminded me of the Slumber Party Massacre, because, you know, the killer uses a drill in that movie, too.
And? Hello?
Hello?
Well, I mean, that I was waiting to hear y'all agree with me.
Yes, uh-huh. Of course, it looks like that.
Okay, all right. But that's actually all I've got, so...
Well, thank you. Johnny, thank you. Johnny, have you got anything for us?
I really don't have any background, but through the rumor mill, I've heard many times that Daphne Zuniga pretty much disowns this movie. Is that true?
So apparently it's not on her resume, and she...
Yeah, she claims The Initiation is her first film.
Yeah, which is funny, isn't it? Because I haven't seen this movie for quite a while, and I was watching it, and she's actually... It's not like just a cameo, is it? She's actually kind of a major character for the first 20 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
She's on screen.
Do you think maybe it's her death? Do you think maybe it's the head popping?
Well, I don't know. I think maybe she just thought it wasn't, because I think it was filmed in weekends and it was UCLA, kind of almost like a sort of student project. Maybe she didn't really feel like it was a proper movie, even though it did get a cinema release in the States, two cinema releases, I believe. So, I'd say that the Initiation is probably a better made movie in a lot of ways, but it's cheesier, isn't it? It's a lot cheesier.
Yeah. So, and she also has the "leave me alone" line in The Initiation, which
that
would
line
be something,
is awesome.
Yeah, I know it is awesome. It's Bob. Great. She probably doesn't think it's awesome though.
No, but I thought she was fine in this, but she must have been quite young, wasn't she, when she did this movie?
They said she was 16.
Really? Yeah. Wow. So, yeah.
Well, the only other thing I saw, you know, just kind of going through IMDb, I did see that her and Christopher Young actually worked together again on The Fly too, but that was nothing major.
Okay, cool. All right, well, thank you, Johnny. Joseph, how about you?
Yeah, as Nathan said, the cinematography was completed using the university's equipment. It was shot on the handheld E-Clear cameras. writer-directors Stephen Carpenter and Jeffrey Obrow. They went on to make the wonky but effective monster movie The Kindred from later in the 80s. It's the film that features that fantastic bottle baby artwork for the release poster. Mm-hmm. Furthermore, Carpenter was one of the one of three series creators on the long-running NBC fantasy series Grimm, which ended its six-year run earlier this year. Stephen Carpenter co-wrote the script with Stacy Giacchino, while they were film students at the University of California. The original title of the film was The Third Night and later became Death Dorm after the production wrapped. To secure funding for the film, Obrow and Carpenter shot footage for a preemptive promotional trailer, like Eric or Justin, one of you were saying, in order to pitch the film to investors. The casting was done by Obrow and Carpenter, independent of a casting director, as they couldn't really afford to hire one. So in the film, the casting director is credited as Wesley Lou David, which is a basically an amalgam of the director's and producer's middle names. I do know it was mentioned in Scream 2 just before Randy's big death scene, along with Final Exam, Splatter University, and The House on Sorority Row, I believe. The bulk of the film was shot over Christmas vacation at the university over a period of around 3 weeks in December of 1980 and January of 1981. And additional photography was completed over the ensuing 6 months. And to avoid an X rating, the film was cut substantially by the MPAA in the United States and by the BBFC in the United Kingdom, with portions of the murder scenes truncated or nearly edited out entirely. The murder scene of Debbie's father with a spiked baseball bat was significantly trimmed down to show only one or two blows to the head, and the footage of the maintenance man, Eric's father, being drilled through the head with the being drilled through the head with the power drill was excised entirely. Let's see. Upon the film's release in the United Kingdom under the title Pranks, the film was deemed to be a video nasty, most likely because of the drill killing sequence and for the cover artwork, which depicted the spiked baseball bat. It was assumed that the BBFC had worries that because the killing weapon was depicted clearly, it was imitable. However, the film was not successfully prosecuted and was removed from the list. It was eventually re-released on video in 1992 with 10 seconds of cuts to the aforementioned drill murder. In the United States, the film was released by its distributor under the title Pranks in 1982, altered from Carpenter and Obrow's original title, Death Dorm. After the distributors found the title unsatisfactory and non-conducive to box office sales, the film was re-released as The Dorm That Dripped Blood on October 7th, 1983. And in the United Kingdom, it was released exclusively under the Pranks title. And I do believe that is all I have.
Okay, well, thank you, Joseph. Is there anything left, Eric?
There's very little left, actually, after that. Matthew Mungall, who did the effects, now I don't know, we may have mentioned this, I'm not sure, and he went on to win an Oscar for working on Bram Stoker's Dracula in 1992. He also worked on a lot of horror movies, a couple of we've covered on the podcast, actually, Just Before Dawn, Elm Street 3, Mausoleum, Phantom of the Mall, My Revenge, and also bigger budgeted films like Edward Scissorhands and Schindler's List. So he, you know, he's one of a few people actually in this movie who went on to big things. Christopher Young, of course, being the other. This was his first film, as we said, doing the score. Their next film was one called The Power that they did after this. I've never seen it. I don't actually know what it's about.
Was that their next film? Because if you look on the IMDb, it predates The Dorm That Dripped Blood, I think.
The Power. No, they say on the contract that their next film was The Power. And then after that, they went on to do The Kindred. Now, I've a special fondness for The Kindred because it came out in video just as I was getting into horror about 1987. And I just remember the trailer for it being on the front of practically every release I rented had a trailer for The Kindred in front of it. So I remember that title very well. The scene of Bobby Lee in his apartment with his scantily clad girlfriend was an afterthought shot late in the day because they wanted to have some boobies. And that's not the right word. What's the right word, Johnny? I'm looking for.
I believe it is titties.
That's it. Sorry. Yes.
Yeah, you were right, Eric. I looked that up. The power on the IMDb is 84. So yeah. I was wrong. Sorry.
Has anyone seen The Power?
No,
nope.
I don't
know. But I've heard CNC Music Factory has the power.
Oh, was that Snap?
Oh, it was Snap, you're right.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Justin might know this because Justin doesn't like pop music.
I only like goth.
Yeah, you only like goth music, yeah. Anyway, the titties are there primarily to have some booby footage to put into the trailer. That's the only reason that scene is there, because I if you've watched the movie, you'll know that it serves no plot purpose at all. And yeah, that's about it. As I said, as they were saying, the two guys, two directors, were still studying at the university. So I think it's Jeffrey Obro says at one stage in the commentary track on the Blu-ray that he had to miss a day of filming and leave it to Stephen Carpenter to do because he had to sit a final. So when you consider the fact that they must have only been 20 or 21 making this film as complete amateurs. So big kudos to them, I suppose. But that's all the background I have. Justin, do you have any more?
Well, it's pretty much covered everything. But luckily, one thing I did do was look at the what the film was called in different territories. So, and translated it, which is the old standby if you've got, everyone else has said everything. But in Poland, It was The Bedrooms Dripping Blood. In Portugal, it was...
I think we're all thinking the same thing. Yes, yeah.
I said this. Well, anyway, the Portugal, it was The Bloody Mansion. In Russia, A House Where Blood Is Falling. In Germany, it was Death Trauma. And in Republic of Ireland, it was Toya, The Voice That Shattered Glass.
Shut up, you stupid boy with your stupid smelly brain.
But that's all I've got, I'm afraid.
It's not even funny. It's not even funny.
That's all I have. Unfortunately, I did have a whole list of things, but it's all been covered by everyone else.
Should we do Nathan's after the credits then?
Yeah, well, let's play the jingle for after the credits.
After the credits. Okay. After the credits of The Dorm That Dripped Blood. This is my theory. I don't necessarily think that Craig killed himself in when he killed Joanne. I do think that, the next year he left to go to a new college. He was going to finish his, master's degree when he found a new girl. We will call her Veronica.
Nice name.
And yeah. And he...
It's Jason Voorhees' mother.
I know.
No, it's not Jason Voorhees' mother. Her name's Pamela.
Veronica. Justin even says you see it in her coat when she hangs it up.
Justin's lying. Do you believe everything Justin tells you? Justin probably won't get out of fifth grade.
No, he thinks I'm a murderer, apparently. Mm. But he sees this woman, Veronica, and he falls madly in love with her. And I do mean madly because, he's crazy. So he systematically starts slaughtering all her friends. That's going to get in the way. And towards the finale, when she finds out that he's the one that's been murdering all her friends, she throws him in an incinerator and he dies a horrible, traumatic death. And she gets justification for Joanne. And there you have it. Way to go, Veronica. You did it.
Ray for Veronica.
Yeah, who never existed. Yep. But anyway, yes. But anyone else got any other theories about how it would have ended?
Well, I was thinking that Joanne doesn't die. Craig escapes thinking he's killed Joanne, but he's just actually placed her in the incinerator, but there's only like small embers in there, so she survives. But she's in a coma maybe for 2 or 3 months, and that's where the sequel picks up, where she awakens and she decides to get her revenge, and she disguises herself as somebody, let's call her Barbara, and she goes after Craig then and turns the tables.
Oh, see, I like your idea too.
But Johnny, have you got any ideas for what could have happened after the credits?
Honestly, I think it was a decoy. I think he carried her and then sat her down next to the incinerator, and then he went and grabbed Hemet's body and threw it in there. And so basically she comes to, decides that, he's not that bad after all. They decide to leave, and that smell that the cops are smelling is actually Hemet's body. But then right after that, it rains, and next you have Return of the Living Dead because his body was so toxic that nobody could stand the rain from it.
Wow.
So, what? But they lived half – they were out of town by the time it rained, so they were good to go.
So it's sort of half a romantic movie and half of a zombie movie.
It is. I mean, they have to come back and face the zombies at some point because, you know, all the police questioning and stuff. But it works out in the end.
I kind of like that because, funnily enough, I was thinking exactly the same thing when I saw the smoke going up, and I thought it would. He got in and into the incinerator with Joanne, and burned, and it went up, and the rain came down, and it basically all the dead serial killers across the state, and all the dead murderers came back to life and started a fresh killing spree.
Ooh. Oh,
that would be crazy to have a movie with that many serial killers.
Yeah. So, Joseph, I think you're the only person who hasn't tossed one on into the ring.
Come on, toss one now.
I think Craig, many years later, would probably meet up with someone, a husband and wife named Jared and Stephanie, and he'd stuff Stephanie in the incinerator.
Yes.
Oh, my God, there's a movie called that.
Yes. Oh, Eric, where have you been? So, Nathan, are you happy with your after the credits?
I am. I liked all your ideas very much. I think that any of them could work. Maybe not Joseph's, because that means Craig gets away with it. So maybe not his. And I'm okay with him getting away with it as long as Joanne's cool with it. That's why I'm okay with Johnny's. Yeah, as long as Joanne's all right with it, then
he's willing to do for her.
Yeah, I imagine her being embers, she's probably not that mithered either way, is she?
No.
But okay, well, that was after the credits. So let's move on to some feedback and let's see what people on the forums have been saying. Joseph, are you going to tell us what people have been saying? Actually, before we do that, we forgot to mention whose pick this was, because it was one of the listener picks, wasn't it?
Oh, yes.
No, yeah. this was the contest winner from that Facebook game.
Oh, right.
It was Tristan Comer.
Okay, oh. Tristan. Okay, well, congratulations. So, yes. So I hope you've enjoyed us prattling on about this film. And what a prize it has been. I'm sure everyone would agree. So, what about, some feedback? What are other people thinking about The Dawn That Dripped Blood, Joseph?
Well, just a few here. Scott Harn says, one of the more mean-spirited slasher films of the era, maybe the meanest. I've always found the murders in this movie to be relentless. And the look of the entire thing is very dark and dreary. I've always thought the POV shots were really effective as well. The scene where the killer in a rage is smashing everything on the dining table with a nail-studded bat is seared into my memory. It sort of reminds me of some of the POV shots in Black Christmas. More than anything else, it takes a massive risk with the end scene, which I'm not sure is totally satisfying, but again, it seems tonally appropriate given the overall feel of the movie leading up to that point. Intentionally or not, there is a hard edge to this movie, and while I do like it, it's not something I watch regularly or casually. I don't know if depressing is the right word, but it's not a fun watch by any means. As a side note, I've always wondered why the writers chose to set the film at Christmas. I know the plot setup requires the campus to be empty, but there are a number of other possible occasions that could have been used for this. Unlike most slashers set during Christmas time, there is no aesthetic influence or acknowledgement of the holidays, so to speak. Instead, it just kind of remains buried in the narrative. The fact that all of these things are occurring at the holiday does perhaps give it another layer of grit. Troy Escamilla says, this one is interesting, definitely mean-spirited. I also think this does a great job of creating a very claustrophobic and creepy atmosphere despite the size of the campus / dorm that serves as the location. And yes, that ending, completely ballsy for the time and actually uncomfortable to watch. It alone makes this one of the more memorable slasher films from the 80s. David Cook says that ending tends to overshadow the rest of the movie for me and is certainly the most memorable thing about the movie. It also gets a bonus point for a title which riffs on a certain Amicus classic and which is far better than the alternative Pranks title, which doesn't fit the movie. Chris Moore says, gotta love that ending. Talk about dark. And finally, Lawrence Adams says, one of my all-time favorites.
Cool. Well, thank you for the feedback. Well, let's play How to Get in Contact with the Show, and then we'll come back. Have we got any more feedback to come back with, Joseph?
I don't think so.
Oh, well, there you go. Well,
my joke of the week.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's play How to Get in Contact with the Show, and then we'll come back with Eric's joke of the week. As they say, you should always finish on keep the best for last, but obviously you can't do that this time. But anyway, we'll be back in a second.
The content of this podcast was provided by Justin Kurzweil, Eric Frillfall, Nathan Johnson, and Joseph Henson. If you enjoy our program and are willing and able to provide a donation, please visit us on Patreon and become a content-designated subscriber. That's patreon.com/thehysteriacontinues. For non-subscriber PayPal donations and general feedback, our address is the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com. To listen and interact, simply search for The Hysteria Continues on iTunes, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. Susie versus Toya forever.
Yes. Well, although we have no feedback this time, so we hate you all. What we will be doing is we love all our Patreon supporters because we've got quite a few new ones who've come on board and have been wowed by the splendor that is the extra minisode that we just put out. And next time. next time, which I found out actually going to be being put out on Blu-ray soon by somebody, and they were trying to track down
Second Sight, I think, was it? Or...
Yeah, they're trying to track down Tony,
Simon Nash. Yeah.
Simon Nash, the wonderful Tony child actor, who's probably has changed his name under the Witness Protection Scheme, I imagine.
you think you'll be up to doing the commentary, Eric? You're Tony, remember?
I'm not Tony.
but next time...
I'm the fat woman who hides under the couch and steals the chocolates.
You said it, Eric. But anyway, next time we're doing... Nathan, you have to tell us, because I always get the title wrong. It's Sorority Babes in the Slime Bowl-a-rama.
It's right? Sorority Babes in the Slime Ball Bowl-a-rama.
Bowl-a-rama, that's the one. So that's coming up. And also...
That is one of the funnest movies ever.
Well, I'm looking forward to watching that. I've never seen it, so that'll be interesting. And also, we're edging ever closer. Like, by this point, we get to... It'll be 2072 by the time we get to hit our goal. But if we do, we are going to do a drunk cast of Demons 1 and 2. Only for our all of our 5 Patreon listeners. So...
We only have 33 left, and then we hit the 100 mark, and that's the goal. So,
well, there you go. So, what an incentive that could be! Well, what more could you want than listening to us knocking back drinks and talking about what's her name?
Sally.
Yes, yeah. Eric in a dress.
These sleeves go back and forth. I told you.
Big Bobby Rhodes.
Yeah.
So
that's a bunch of shit, baby.
So anyway, we haven't got anything left to talk about, have we? There's nothing worth discussing now. So
no, it's my joke of the week.
No, so let's end the episode right now.
Bye. Say goodbye to good people. Bye.
Justin, do you have the one trumpet ready?
Hey,
hold on. Okay. I'm all queued up and ready to go.
You're not going
to
need it this time because it's a cracker. Where's my jingle?
Oh.
It's my joke of the week. It's so fantastic.
So why is some of the acting in Pranks so wooden? Because one of the directors was a carpenter.
Oh, that was actually good, Eric. I like that
one. Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Justin. Well, some people do appreciate my work.
I've always heard that stand-up must be hard. So I can imagine you lying in bed, staring at the ceiling, trying to come up with that joke.
I thought about it on the bus on the way home from work today.
Well, thank you. No, that wasn't too bad, although it was fairly... I don't know, it wasn't particularly inventive. But it was not, you know... So anyway, thank you, Eric. What are we covering next time, Eric, I think this is your choice, isn't it?
Is it my pick? Okay, we're going listener pick time again. Shannon Kinney has requested we cover the remake of The Town That Dreaded Sundown from 2014. So that's what we'll be doing next.
Excellent. Okay, well, we shall look forward to that for episode 151. And I just want to say again, thank you very, very much for Johnny joining us again on the show.
Thank you, Johnny.
Yes,
thank you all for having me on. This has been fun.
Absolutely. And it hasn't been 6 in the morning either, which is a benefit.
Yeah.
it's kind of flipped on its side, really, on its head, because it's quarter to midnight here in the UK and Ireland. So, and it's a kind of a decent, because normally when we record these, sometimes when we've got guests on from the West Coast and the States, then it can be even earlier. But it's usually 6 o'clock in the morning for Nathan and Joseph, isn't it? And sometimes, obviously, Nathan and Joseph could be quite sleepy. Obviously, Nathan sometimes chemically enhanced.
Can be sleepier. Yeah.
Sleepier, inverted commas. But it must be a bit of a luxury for you three to be up so late, or up so later than normal.
No, obviously not.
Well, we won't bloody be doing that game, will we, Eric?
We thought we'd doing you a favour, ungrateful
6
fiends.
O'clock in the afternoon.
But thank you, Johnny, for coming on the show. And are we going to be treated to some more Kruger Nation soon?
I'm trying to get everything wrapped back up with Kruger Nation. The website kind of went up for grabs, and the guy who runs it, we're actually trying to get him to pick it back up again. But also, I'm doing Short Bus Cinema. Been doing that podcast for a while. Right now, we're on a little bit of a break because the other my co-host Ricky, he has some stuff in his personal life that he's dealing with. But we plan to keep that going. We basically talk about the worst of the worst movies, and it's a funny show. It's pretty much us just taking the piss out of some really bad movies.
Well, like
Nocturne by Susie and the Banshees.
Oh.
That could be the next. It could be the next episode.
Yeah.
Johnny could cover Celebrity Cash in the Attic episodes.
Hey. Yeah.
Toyer.
Have you guys
barge.
Done on the show? Have you guys done Blood Salvage?
No. I see you've done it on episode 6 of your.
Yes.
Sure, yeah.
That was man, that's a painful movie. Well, there's some great sound bites we got from it though, but man, that movie is painful. But it's definitely up your alley. It's definitely something that I think you guys should do eventually.
Nathan, that
I remember there's like a Dukes of Hazzard reference in there where the Duke clone, like Coy, is driving the car and somebody honks the General Lee like horn at him or something like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of really goofy stuff in there. They basically wanted to make the Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 2, but in their own way, and they failed in every possible aspect.
Yeah, I haven't seen that in years, but I'll check that out again.
Cool.
I'm sure Nathan is going to force us to watch it at some stage.
Yeah.
Eventually. We'll get to it.
So, again, thank you, Johnny. And what are we playing out with, Eric, as this is your pick?
We're playing out with
Well,
Toya,
it wasn't your pick, actually. It was my pick, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I was the one who did all the sound clips.
Yeah.
So I chose to play out with Toya, It's a Mystery, because there's a mystery as to who the killer is.
Is it because it's kind of a low-budget sort of...
No, it's nothing to do with that. It's just to do with the fact that it's a mystery.
Well, sadly, I forgot to tell you this, Eric, but the sound clip you sent through to me got corrupted.
Yeah, I'm sure it did.
So...
I'll send it to you again. You can edit it back in later. We're not releasing this for the week.
Okay. Right. Anyway, well, thank you for listening to The Hysteria Continues, and I hope you enjoyed our birthday episode, 150. So who knows? We might be here for another 150. Gosh, can you imagine? But yes, well, we've enjoyed it. And thank you again, Johnny, for coming on the show. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you.
And you look forward to having you on again next time. So, next time we're off to the town that dreaded sundown. So, hope to see you or hope you join us next time. And again, remember to sign up to Patreon for as little as $1, and then you can hear us wittering on about non-slasher movies.
I saw in the news today that Patreon aren't supporting adult content anymore, so we can't pimp out Nathan as a perk, which we were hoping to do.
What were you going to do, Nathan, as a perk? Are you going to be twerking or
something? I can't twerk. I guess I could...
you know, watch my kind of movies with somebody. So, you know, that, I'm sure there's a lot of people that are willing to watch what I like.
See, I like the idea. I like the idea.
And pay for us.
What, how's that?
Well,
how's that erotic?
I like.
Yeah.
But how's that kind of
there's a lot of nudity in these movies?
Okay. Boy. I like the idea of if we get to like 250 Eric will call people and tell a joke.
Yes. Well, it's kind of personalized.
You need
jokes.
A lot of money for that because
like listeners are just random people.
just pick a name from the phone book.
Yeah. Why is the acting in Pranks so wooden?
God, imagine who could win that lottery. Yeah. That,
yeah.
Yeah. So.
God damn you, stop calling here.
Is that the cocksucker residence?
Yeah.
So, anyway, thank you for joining us. And, yes. Yeah, we'll see you next time. So, say goodbye to the good people.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. And enjoy this Toya song I've chosen for you all.
Bye. From the view
suspended in the no one say anything, so Justin has nothing to put at the end of the show.
What movie are we covering?
it's Showgirls.
Oh, I would love that. No, I'm still here. It's just your discussion was a little beneath me. You guys, I wasn't going to upstage Eric, but I had a joke of the week, too, but I wasn't going to say it on the show. It was too adult. Did you guys know that they originally were going to do a sequel, The Dorm That Drip Blood Part 2? It was going to be about an all-girls dorm, and they all got on the same cycle.
Oh.
Get it? It's a gross joke.
It could be like the time we stopped and Nathan's like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to read this feedback because it's very long and it's going to be hard.
I did say that once. Accidental innuendos. Like, I don't mean to say them, but then you guys laugh and I don't know what's funny. Sometimes I just play along and I really don't get it.